This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 89. In this episode, we're going to talk to Scott Hoag about the Azure App Proxy and the Azure App Gateway, recorded live August 1st, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, everyone. Unfortunately or fortunately, you're stuck with just me today. It's just Chris here. AC is out of action. If you want the backstory on that, he flew up to Seattle or up to Redmond to participate in an internal Microsoft technical training conference called Tech Ready, caught something on the plane on the way, managed to just get through his session at TechReady, coughing and spluttering, and then subsequently lost his voice. So he's unable to talk at the moment, which, you know, is an unfortunate situation for us for the podcast, but we hope he gets well soon and can start talking again because we know we love and miss his voice dearly on the podcast. So today you're stuck with me, but never fear, we have a couple of things in store for you today. I'm going to go through a couple of news items, and then we're going to get stuck into an interview with Scott Hoag about the Azure App Gateway and Azure App Proxy services. So that will be super interesting, and definitely stick around for that. But before we get on to the meat and potatoes of the show, I thought I'd go through a couple of quick news items for you. The first came out on July the 21st, and this is entitled, it's up on the Office blogs, it's Office 365 channels are live on IFTTT. If you haven't used IFTTT, it stands for If This Then That, and it's a really cool little internet-based service for connecting cloud services and doing simple action and event type triggers. So for example, I have one so that when I favorite a tweet, it saves that tweet in my in a OneNote notebook. You could do all sorts of interesting things. I'll point to the blog up in the show notes. But in a nutshell, we launched the Office 365 channels, including mail, files with OneDrive for Business, calendar, and contacts. And so you can go up, activate these channels, and then do things like, you know, when you take an Instagram photo or put a photo on Instagram, you can have it automatically trigger and save that off into OneDrive for you if you like. Or another one here in the blog post that we've got is when you create a meeting in Office 365's calendar, create a task for that in Trello so you can make some notes there or make some follow-up actions and things like that. I also have one, my personal favorite is if Sacha emails me, then I send myself a text message. So not that that happens all that often, but when it does, I really want to know about it. So try out IFTTT. It's a free service. There's like, I don't know if they've got hundreds or if it's thousands of different channels. There's all sorts of really interesting things you can do with IFTTT. I have my my Nest, my home thermostat hooked up so that it sends me an iOS notification if it gets over a certain temperature in the house, for example, which is kind of handy. There's all sorts of things you can wire up and take advantage of to help sort of automate your life, for want of a better word there. So definitely take a look, wire it up into Office 365 and start having a play around with those IFTTT Office 365 channels. Okay, so that was the first news item. Second news item, quick plug for the Office Dev Show up on Channel 9. This is absolute gratuitous plug, but we recently launched, or a colleague of mine, Sonia Kopdev, recently launched a new show up on Channel 9 called the Office Dev Show. So you go up there and take a look at that. They're up to episode number 3. And in episode 3, which came out a few days ago now, Sonia talks to Vesa Juvonen about the Patterns and Practices project, which helps developers use, you know, repeatable patterns and practices and learn from some of the best in the industry about how you do stuff in a cloud development world with Office 365. So Vesa walks through the project, talks about it in some detail. You know, Vesa's really the brainchild behind the PNP project. He has a lot of contributors from around the community and also from other Microsoft folks. But Vesa helps wrangle this project and pull it all together. And it's been a huge amount of work for him. And it's an amazing project for us. It's all open sourced up in GitHub. So you can go participate. I think they're up to like maybe 600. Oh, no, it looks like 819 forks on GitHub now. So there's tons of usage and tons of contributions going off into the PNP project. It's a very valuable asset if you're looking to do any development with Office 365. Chances are somebody has invented the wheel before you, so go take a look at that. In particular, Vessel walks through a provisioning and branding engine to provision assets to your Office 365 site in a nice programmatic way using a declarative model. So definitely take a look at that. So that's the Office Dev Show up on channel9.msdn.com. And we will go and drop those links in the show notes too. So now let's move on to the meat and potatoes of the show. Scott Hoag, we have a great interview coming up with him about the Azure App Gateway and the Azure App Proxy. Now, these are two services available in Azure for quite different purposes, but I haven't had a chance to take a look at them. So this will be a really super interesting interview, and I hope you get a ton out of it. So without further ado, let's get to the interview.
Today, I'm going to talk to Scott. We're going to talk a little bit about some Azure App Proxy and App Gateway. So, Scott, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. And before we dive too much into this, into our discussion here, how can people find you? What kind of stuff are you into? Twitter, Facebook, or if you want to share Facebook, blog. You got a podcast, too. I want to make sure you call out, too. So how can people find you?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Scott Hoag. I'm an infrastructure engineer with a company called Applied Information Sciences based out of Washington, D.C. You mentioned I'm into a couple of things. I do have a podcast of my own called Brewery FM. So I do that with an Office 365 MVP named Dan Usher. We chat about quite a few of the same things you and CJ chat about, but I tend to think we go a little bit deeper than just the news sometimes and banter back and forth on some things we've got going on in real world projects. I blog. My blog is at psconfig.com. So if anybody's ever done SharePoint and they're into the IT pro side of things, they probably recognize psconfig from actually going through and running the configuration wizard in SharePoint. And then my Twitter handle is CipherTXT, CipherTXT. People can get a hold of me there. They can get a hold of me through the blog. Sometimes it's on Tumblr, so they can ask questions and things like through that. Or, like I said, the podcast we do is Brewery FM, and that's just hosted at brewery.fm. And people can go there and see the things we talk about and consume media that way as well.
You do a much better job with your podcast as far as the show notes go than CJ and I do. We would call like one or two things, like, all right, we'll just put this link in here and this link in here. But I go to y'all's show. I listen to y'all's show. You guys do a great job. And I always go look at the show notes. It's like, man, they're kicking our ass on this thing.
it's a bit of a process to get it all done. It takes a little while to put it all together. And I think you and CJ have an audio engineer that helps you out with some of the edits and things like that, or at least as far as production.
Yeah.
I am Brewery FM's audio engineer, so I've learned a lot about GarageBand and Logic and things like that. But, it takes a little while to put together, but it's also really fun to do, to just sit down and kind of banter back and forth and talk through a bunch of the things that we've got going on, whether that's news. You know, I think you and CJ tend to be pretty focused in what you do, and Dan and I are a little more aloof and all over the place. So some days we'll talk about something that we broke on our MacBooks, and other days we'll be taking, you know, a deep dive on Azure Active Directory and something that one of us ran into over time. So yeah, it's kind of what we do and go with it.
Or even talk about a guy who builds an 8-foot, 75,000 piece Lego tower too. I saw that one of the latest shows.
Yeah, we've had a couple requests to talk about Legos. So we try and keep people informed about what's going on, you know, whether that's things happening at Legoland and here's how to get a free stay in the hotel rooms down there at the new hotel, or if there's a new kit that comes out or something like that. You know, whatever it is, we try and make everybody happy.
Oh, yeah. It's cool. No, you guys do a good job with it. It's been fun. It's nice. I like having a bunch of people in the same space because we can each kind of do our own little thing. We can each kind of have our own little spin on stuff and kind of go deep in some ways and other ones. I would love to go deeper on, let's talk more about what kinds of projects and stuff we're working on, but I think CJ's employer doesn't exactly go along with sharing everything that he's working on prior to announcements that they're going to do.
Yeah, there could be a little bit of an NDA there for him, you know. And you can only talk about Fabricam and AdventureWorks and Contoso so much before you go, oh, really? We need to come up with a new client name.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a bit of an outlet for him, too, so he doesn't have to always talk about Office 365. We try and focus on Azure stuff as well, which, hey, that kind of goes into what we were going to talk about today. I brought you on the show because there are two topics that I see that are getting bigger and bigger and more popular. People asking a lot of questions about them around Azure. And I've seen a couple demos with it. I think that there's a lot of confusion or misunderstanding or lack of understanding on what these things are. You've got this stuff under your belt, so I figured you'd be a great person to talk to about these topics here. So the two things are the application proxy, and the other one is application gateway. So I'm going to serve the role of the listener who doesn't know what these things are, which is going to be very easy and genuine because I am the host that doesn't know what these things are all that much, aside from a demo I've seen Kirk Evans do. So how's that sound? We do that today?
Sounds perfect. Hopefully we can both learn something along the way.
Sounds good. So, hey, why don't you start here? Tell me a little bit, what is app proxy? How would you describe this to someone and why would they use it?
Sure. So if anybody is familiar with the term of a proxy, really we're talking about usually having a device or a piece of software that's sitting in line one way or the other for traffic. So typically in the infrastructure world, we have things like forward proxies. So maybe you work for an organization that likes to monitor internet traffic outbound, right? If you work for a large organization, a financial institution, a government agency, something like that, you know, Big Brother is probably monitoring that. So when you sit at your computer and you browse the internet, you're probably browsing through another device or another piece of software. So those are forward proxies. They kind of capture our traffic that's going from internal to external, and they watch it and they monitor it and they do what they need to do with it. And then the other kind of proxy we have is a reverse proxy. So reverse proxies capture traffic from the outside world, or really something that's going to be external to our network, and they're going to act as a junction point to handle that communication handoff to a backend resource. So if we think of something, take your typical extranet, right? So if we have a website hosted in IIS and it sits internally on one of our systems, we might not want to let users from the outside world actually initiate a connection all the way back to our internal network. So to get around that, we would have another device like a reverse proxy sitting in a DMZ or some other open zone where they can come through, they can initiate that connection, and then the proxy sits in the middle and handles all the communication for the user back and forth from that application. So we can be assured that the proxy is handling security and communications back and forth between that internal resource, and we haven't exposed that internal resource fully to the outside world. So we didn't have to punch any holes in firewalls or try and move across multiple network boundaries, things like that. So that's kind of proxies at a high level. Within the context of Azure, we have this construct called the application proxy. So this is a service offering. It's a little strange. I don't think a lot of people know about it. I don't run into too many folks that know it's there right off the cuff because it's actually part of Azure Active Directory. So as you start to consume that service within Azure Active Directory, if you have an Office 365 tenancy or you've been doing anything with a tenant on that side, you might have noticed when you go in and manage, there's a little applications tab in there. And one of the types of applications that we can add is an internal application with this Azure application proxy. So there's a couple of prerequisites. There might be a reason that folks haven't seen it or they haven't played around with it. The first really big one is you have to be on a different SKU of Azure AD other than the free SKU. So within Azure AD, we have free, we have basic, and we have premium. Everything's kind of tiered into that. And you do need to be in the basic or premium SKUs. So that's not something that comes with an Office 365 subscription. It doesn't come with the default out-of-the-box subscription. So if folks want to go ahead and have a go at this, they want to play with it, whatever it is, they would have to either do a trial. So you can do trials of basic or premium. You can just initiate those through the portal. Not a problem. Or you can go out and actually purchase that for a production implementation, whether you get that through open licensing or volume licensing, something like that. But once you have that license available and you assign that individual license to a user, so typically what happens is we'd say we have, let's say we have a small business and we have 150 people within our organization, we would go buy 150 licenses for Azure AD Premium or Basic, depending on our need. And then we would assign those licenses to our users. Once we've done that, we can actually go and create these application proxy applications, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little confusing when we talk about them, but if you've ever done, I think consumers of your show here, they'll have done things like Azure AD applications, and you've blogged about these quite a bit, right? And the flows behind them and everything else. They're the same exact thing. They're created in exactly the same way through the same portal. They're managed in the same space. Really what we're doing is we're saying, rather than having an application that's hosted someplace else, like in an Azure Logic app or something like that, or maybe it's a PHP site that sits over in AWS or something like that. Who cares? Really, this thing is going to be, we're going to say we have an existing application and it lives internally on our network. And then we can allow users from the outside world to get back to that connection. So there's some really interesting things that happen here. So when I talked about proxies earlier, we talked about typically there's a piece of software or device or something that sits in line. Azure Application Proxy is actually built on top of Service Bus relays. So if anybody's ever played around with Service Bus or they've used things like some of the Azure SQL database connectors and things like that that rely on Service Bus. Service Bus is really great for being able to have agents that run on premises that can basically punch holes to the outside world and initiate those connections on behalf of users. And then we don't need to really open up any additional holes and firewalls or anything like that. So the really cool thing about this is you're going to create an application. So say you host a SharePoint instance internally, maybe you have your portal internally and you go, it'd be really nice if people could get to this from home and, you're already syncing to Azure AD, maybe you have an Office 365 subscription, something like that. So you create this new application and you say, I want to create this internal type of application that relies on app proxy. You'll actually go ahead and generate basically that configuration within Azure AD. And then there's a little connector that gets spun up on premises, and that can run on really any server with outbound internet access. It needs to be able to talk back to Azure Active Directory and initiate that handshake and do all those bits and pieces. But it can really sit anywhere. So it could sit on, if you're doing dir sync or AAD sync, it could sit on that box. It could sit on some box someplace else. It's really just a lightweight piece of software. It runs a couple Windows services, and it just handles that communication back and forth.
So when the request comes in, then when someone's making a call, then to, like, let's say they're sitting at home, they want to connect to their on-prem SharePoint environment that's been protected behind the firewall, and they're using App Proxy to do this. Do they go to a special website to go actually connect to it, or do they just go like they're going to the normal site and the DNS has been set up to route them through the Azure AD proxy or the Azure App Proxy?
It's a great question. So there's a couple different ways to get at it. So if I'm sitting internally on the network, my connection never needs to go through that proxy. Mm-hmm. So say my URL is portal.contoso.com. So I would just continue to sit at my desk and go to portal.contoso.com. When I go home, when that application definition was generated in Azure AD, it actually had a special URL, something at like msappproxy.net. So it gets a bit of a crazy name. So you would have whatever you called your application, and then it's going to be something in that msappproxy domain. So one of the cool things we can do, like a lot of other Azure services, I think everybody should be familiar with the concepts of DNS and doing CNAMEs, mm-hmm. and kind of the masking that comes with that. So we can create a custom CNAME. So what do we call our internal one? It was SharePoint or portal.contoso.com. Mm-hmm. So we could have something like extportal.contoso.com. Mm-hmm. And that's just a CNAME that points back to that MS app proxy. And that way, when people go home, they can type in that other URL and that they'll just be all set. So what's going to happen is when they hit that external endpoint, they're going to be routed into that appproxy.net domain. Azure AD is going to pick up the connection. It's going to say, oh, look, here's a thing that I need to talk back to an on-premises system for. I need to broker this connection through Service Bus on behalf of the user. So let me go ahead and pick up that connection, talk to the connector on-premises, and handle the push and pull of that traffic back and forth.
So it's just handing off the HTTP request and handing back the HTTP response, and it's just doing the going in between the connector and the original requester.
Exactly. Oh. Yep. That's all it's doing. So and again, it's actually a service bus relay that's handling all of that for you. So there's really not too many requirements for service bus as far as outbound connections and things that need to be enabled on a firewall. So typically we would have an SSL secured connection. So it's going to be SSL secured on the outside. And then we'd want it to be SSL secured on the inside, just so we can have the whole chain front to back mm-hmm. all set and ready to go. But that's pretty much it. It's really dead simple. There's this connector that gets installed on premises. Once that connector is there, it acts as a broker for all those connections back and forth.
What kind of a lag do we see with this kind of brokering going back and forth? Is it something that users are going to notice too much, or is it just is it pretty acceptable? Or
classic SharePoint answer, it depends, right?
Touché.
Well, we can host services out of different data centers in Azure. So you've got a couple dependencies. So you've got Azure AD and that tenancy and what's happening with it, which is going to be typically, if you've ever looked at those and you go in and you say, hey, where's my Azure AD hosted out of? Mm-hmm. It's typically not hosted out of a data center. It's hosted out of a country.
Right.
It'll be like EMEA or it'll say United States, things like that. So usually we can count on the fact that if we're in the US, and a lot of our other subscription had things going on in the East US or East US 2, hopefully, that's where most of our tenancy sits and everything's okay. So you might see a little bit of lag, right? And that's certainly a possibility, but you're not really relying on this solution to be a highly performant kind of thing, right? You want it to be able to initiate the connection and broker that connection back and forth. So there's a lot of things that are outside the control of Microsoft. So they can't control your inbound pipe and your network latency or anything else that's going on in the world. There are some things you can do to mitigate that, right? We can still do things like you can have an express route connection and start to get low latency connections back to Azure and the services that are hosted within it. And then those services that are hosted in Azure make use of those connections going the other way too. But because this lives in Azure AD, it's not really tied to a particular VNet or something like a site-to-site VPN gateway or anything like that. So unless you have that holistic connection for your entire subscription, it's a little tough to monitor it through. I really haven't seen too many delays with it. It's just kind of like browsing a website. Maybe it introduces an extra second or two to a connection coming across. But most of the time, where I've been doing it for kind of quick wins and scenarios like that is things like external access from a mobile device. So think like an iPad or a tablet or something like that. So, if you walk into an organization and you have C-suite executives who are walking around and saying, I want to be able to access the internet from home, make that happen tomorrow. This is something that you can do to actually make that happen tomorrow. And it's available on device and ready to go. So, I've noticed with things like iPads are pretty quick, but you can always still see in Safari when it initiates a web connection and the little blue bar goes across.
Yeah.
That always takes a second or two anyway. So, I would say it's minimal. Really, you're going to want to focus on the things that you have control over if you choose to move forward with something like this. So, again, being a SharePoint guy, do a bit around SharePoint performance and things like that. It's really easy to undersize our environments and kind of underestimate what's going to happen there. So, if your pages already take 5 seconds to load on premises, they're going to take 5 to 6 to 7 seconds externally. You might want to focus a little bit on performance improvements internally and get to kind of those better numbers of like any place between like 1 and 3 second page response times to make that work for your users. But at the end of the day, it's really minimal overhead and it's just this little service bus relay and they work really great. They're just TCP connections straight back and forth.
So let me ask you this, as simple as it sounds, is there we talked a little about SharePoint. We talked about that being a use case. I would assume that other on-prem based applications or web-based applications, those are the things we're also going to want to, that this would be a good use case for. But when I look at this and like comparing it to like, say, reverse proxies or VPNs or stuff like that, is there a reason why I would not want to use this and go with one of those other routes instead of using this? Because the way you just described it, I'm sitting here, at least the developer, not the IT pro side of me, well, there's not really an IT pro side of me, but as the developer side of me, I look at this and say, God, that just seems dead simple compared to all this other stuff that I've been doing.
Absolutely. So it is dead simple, and there are some trade-offs there, right? So if you deploy traditional solutions, so say you deployed a reverse proxy on premises, maybe you had like a traditional legacy solution, like a threat management gateway, like a TMG from Microsoft, or you went with like the new web application proxy role that sits within ADFS and things like that, you're going to get a little bit more monitoring usually. You're going to get some more control over the connections and what happens with them. And you're going to get additional controls around, you know, say you deploy ADFS and you want to proxy that connection back, you can customize the login page to your heart's content. You can do a bunch of additional things along the way. Maybe you want to offer MFA with some multi-factor authentication with like an RSA fob or something like that. So in that case, yes, you'd have to have that solution. Being that this is focused purely on Azure Active Directory, we're bound by the limitations of Azure Active Directory. So one of those big ones would be something like MFA, right? If I want to use that out of the box with Azure AD, I'm stuck in that phone factor offering. So if that's something that doesn't meet my business rules on premises, I probably can't go down this path and deploy the solution. There are some other things that could get in the way as well. So application proxy from a technology perspective, if I want it to be able to do things like single sign-on and proxy those connections back and forth and have really a seamless connection back to something like a SharePoint portal, typically we're talking Windows authentication. So that means that my website internally needs to be Windows authenticated. It also needs to support Kerberos constrained delegation. So Kerberos kind of scares a lot of people, and it's really not that hard at the end of the day. And you know, once you set it up, it, you know, it works and it does what it's supposed to do. But for the application proxy, for that connector to be able to handle the connection on behalf of the user, we need to have something like Kerberos in place so that it can actually act as that user on behalf of the user within the system that it's going to initiate the connection to. So it's really appropriate for things like end user connections. So it's great for exposing an internal website to the outside world where appropriate, right? It's not going to be good for system to system connections or things like that, where you really might want an additional device or some more monitoring or something like that introduced along the way. So it's definitely got use cases, and you kind of have to target in on what's that need. So I would say application proxy would be great if we already have a, typically with my clients, you know, Microsoft Shop, I would say we have a Windows authenticated application that can be Kerberos constrained. Awesome. Let's go ahead and take a look at this. And we also have to have things like to be able to do SSO, we have to have directory synchronization in place with one of the, you know, 12 DirSync tools that are available today. And, you know, there are some requirements around things like UPNs in that case. So, you know, I have clients who go and say, let's do directory synchronization, but we're going to do a transform of the UPN from something like contoso.local to make it contoso.com in the cloud. And they never went through that that remediation on premises to fix those IDs. Well, solutions like this kind of start to break down because now the UPN actually does need to match what sits in Azure AD and what sits in your on-premises directory for authentication. So there could be some, you know, I'm kind of glossing over some of it, right? Mm. Because it really is as easy as install a connector, configure Kerberos if you're IWA authenticated, and run a CNAME and you're off to the races. It really is that simple. But there are some additional prerequisites that have to come into play ahead of time just to make sure that everything can go smoothly. You know, if you're a greenfield implementation, that's pretty easy to do. If you're legacy, you might have some things to take a look at just to make sure everything can work the way you want it to. Mm. You know, one other thing I threw out there, another compelling use case for this is as we think about offering applications and exposing applications to not only the outside world in an authenticated manner, because, right, we're still talking about using our on-premises credentials for authentication. So this is awesome. We can buy SSO. We also get all this device access across the way. And out of all the things that they've been adding to Azure AD, they've also started to add things like conditional access policies. So you can automatically get kind of some Intune light capabilities just out of leveraging Azure AD with something like the premium SKU. So you can have a conditional access policy that says for anybody to access this application, they need to have two-factor auth to always get into it. And as long as you're leveraging Azure AD two-factor auth, you've automatically taken an application that was internally on-premises, ready to go. You've exposed it to the outside world. You've secured it with MFA. You're using your on-premises IDs and credentials. You've bought into having access to all of the Azure Active Directory reports. So you can see how often people use that application. You can see how often they log in. You can get all those usage reports out of Azure AD. And then your users, they get a seamless experience. So they can use things like the company portal or the Azure My Apps, the SaaS page. Yeah. That application, because it's a published application, it shows up right there. If you're a consumer of Office 365, it shows up in your application launcher in Office 365 because it's automatically pushed out of Azure AD, right?
Yeah.
So there's some huge business benefits, and there are some trade-offs. So it's like anything else we do. We have to weigh the pros and cons and see where that's going to fall out based on a business case. You know, you're not just going to turn it on one day and say, ooh, look what I did. You're going to be a little premeditated about it and say, okay, here's the business need I have.
Yeah.
Does this meet the business need? Is there enough risk reversal in there that I trust Azure and the services within it to go ahead and offer this service out to my users?
Oh, that's pretty cool. Is it limited to just AD and 443 to HTTP and HTTPS, or could you use it also to, like, say, connect into other machines? Like, if you need to, like, do a telnet session in, or you want to RDP into another machine, can you do that using the app proxy?
So it's just for TCP connections, and it's typically going to be used for AD or 443.
Okay.
Coming back the other way, I would say you'd want to SSL secure everything across the pipe.
Right.
There are other ways to do things with Service Bus. So there's a couple of really cool projects out there. There used to be one called, like, I think it was called Port Connector or something like that. But there are projects out there that let you leverage Service Bus and this same mentality for doing things like that with application to application communications. But it's really meant to be a front end for web applications. It's not going to be something like setting up like an SSH tunnel or some other telnet or like an FTP tunnel back to an internal service.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, cool. Okay, so that's app proxy. The other thing I wanted to talk to you a little bit about was also around application gateway. So what is application gateway? How does it kind of, does it relate, or how does it relate to the app proxy?
So application gateway really doesn't relate at all.
Okay.
So application gateways are something that exist within the confines of VNets. So virtual networks within Azure. You know, we've had a couple of concepts of gateways within VNets for a while. So we've had things like site-to-site gateways or like VNet-to-VNet connections. Those all leverage some very specific tooling that's built into the back end that drives out VNets to make that stuff happen. So Azure Application Gateway is kind of a new offering within there, but it comes down and it really lives underneath the VNet stuff today. That might come out and it might do something else at a later time, but that's where it lives today. So application gateways are layer 7 load balancers that support a couple of things that traditionally things like a cloud service load balancer or a traffic manager tenancy don't support. So you can do things like load balancing with session affinity. So you can start to do like cookie-based session affinity if that's a requirement for your application. You can do HTTP load balancing. So whether that's a connection over port 80 or port 443, not a problem. You're going to hit this endpoint and it's going to handle your load balancing in a round robin manner for you. And the other thing that it adds is SSL offload. So if you were worried about the additional overhead of processing SSL on those backend servers or whatever pool really makes up the backend, you could actually offload that termination point to something like Azure Application Gateway. So at the end of the day, really what you could think of it as is if anybody's ever used something like Application Request Routing, ARR, and that module on top of IIS, this is really ARR as a managed service. So offered as part of a VNet and run through that way. So it's not exposed today in any of the management portals. So it's not in the old ASM portal. It's not in the new ARM portal. It's not out there. It's purely managed through PowerShell commandlets or the REST APIs that drive ASM. So what's going to happen is for something like this, you're going to say, I have a need for a load balancer that does session-based affinity. Well, great. We can do that through Azure now with this service. So what we would have to do is we'd have to step back and take a look and say, okay, so there's this thing called gateways, and gateways come in a couple of different sizes. So they come in a small and a medium and a large, and there really isn't too much guidance out there around what these gateway sizes actually mean. So there's guidance out there for the VPN gateways and basically the throughput that we can push through things. So I don't want to make any assumptions for anybody about what that throughput is going to mean, but basically you can take small to mean POC, you can take medium to mean let's try it out and use it. And then depending on needs, you might need to upgrade to large because for the most part, the documentation doesn't exist on it today. But basically what happens is once we've created that gateway, and it's kind of priced similar to something like a site-to-site gateway. You know, we're charged basically by the minute while that connection's up and it's holding it for us. So you're going to get charged based on the size of the gateway that you have. And then you're also going to get charged based on the data throughput or how much data you're passing through there. So, so for something like a medium gateway today, like a medium and a large gateway, your first 10 terabytes of traffic pushed through that gateway. And really, we're talking load balanced HTTP traffic, right? Your first 10 terabytes of that are free. Yeah, totally awesome. And then when you step up from your first 10 terabytes and then you go to like your next 30 terabytes, so that's 10 to 40 terabytes of traffic, you're paying 0.007 cents per gigabyte in a medium. Or again, if you're in the large, you're free. So there's a huge like buy-in and economy of scale to leverage a service like this. You're going to pay a minimal amount for the gateway per hour. So just like a site-to-site VPN, there's basically what's going to amount to, you have a persistent thing that's up all the time. So you're going to have a monthly charge for that. So the gateways can run any place from $20 to $240 a month based on today's pricing for like an East US, right? So that's US dollars. And then you've just got whatever the charge is for the bandwidth on top of that. So gateways are extremely, I would say they're extremely immature and limited right now. So it is a new service. It's a new offering that's out there. It does have an SLA and pricing and other things around that, right? So it's not fully, it's not like a preview service that's not fully baked and not ready to go. But I would say it doesn't have all the features that you, that traditional organizations might be looking for in a full blown load balancing solution. So something like a hardware load balancer from like F5 or Cisco or something like that. It's really, it's just a basic service, and it prevents you, it saves you the trouble of having to stand up something like application request routing yourself. But if you're already leveraging something from another vendor, you're probably going to find this to be a little limited in what it can handle and what it can do today.
Okay. So you're really just kind of getting the entry point for the people who don't already have something like this set up, but they don't want to go through and manage it themselves. They want to look at it more as a hosted service offering. That's where they're positioning it today.
Yeah. So I tend to look at it as, so if you take a step back and you think about it as application request routing as a managed service, as a PaaS offering. So if anybody's ever configured ARR before, and you have to go and set up a web farm and have a bunch of IaaS machines and all these other things running in the background, this is that typical IaaS to PaaS transition, right? I can say, I'm tired of patching machines and handling all those kind of things. You know, I was spending $40 a month to keep those VMs up anyway. So why don't I just pay Microsoft 20 bucks a month to keep a gateway up for me?
Yeah.
And then it's ready to go. So it's not going to be as robust. It's not going to have all the features, and it's not going to have all the bells and whistles, and you're not going to be able to tweak every button like you do with your existing systems. But if it's basic enough to meet the need, the pricing is certainly compelling and the offering's compelling enough to say, let's take a look at that in the situations where it meets our business cases.
Is this something, is the application gateway, is this something that's in preview, or is it something that's been, that's in GA as limited in the features that we have right now?
I believe it's been GA'd, so it has pricing and it has an SLA around it. So you get 99.9% uptime. And like I said, it's a service that you pay for as soon as you configure the gateway. So typically for preview services, we don't see SLAs for any of those things. So
gotcha.
I believe it's GA'd, but I'd have to go out there and dig around on like the service update site or something like that.
Do you know the same thing on the proxy? Do you know if the app proxy is also GA'd?
App proxy is GA'd. Yep.
It is GA'd. Okay.
Because that's all part of just the Azure AD skewing. And that's out there and available for people to purchase today.
Oh, very cool. Well, this has been really educational for me. I've definitely learned a hell of a lot here. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Anything else you can think of that we need that we should cover with these guys or?
You know, like I said, I would encourage anybody to go out and take a look at the app proxies, especially if you're leveraging those additional SKUs within Azure AD, or if you're looking for a business case to begin to leverage those things. So once you upgrade in SKUs to Azure AD, it gets you way more than just things like application proxy. It starts to get you additional applications that you can assign to your users. It gets you conditional access policies. It gets you a bunch of additional reporting and other things that are available to you. So you know, I view it as a business service where you really do get a lot of bang for your buck out of what you're paying for it. And it can help you retire some on-premises systems and kind of some old cruft along the way and give you some nice new agility and advantages that you didn't have before. For something like Application Gateway, I would say folks would have to take a look at the technical limitations that exist for it today and then see if it meets the need. If it doesn't meet the need, I wouldn't spend too much time spinning my wheels on trying to figure out how am I going to make it do this thing that it doesn't do today? I would just go to another service offering that already has that. So, you know, a great example is if anybody is out there and they're looking at things like the Azure roadmap. So, you know how we have the Office 365 roadmap? There's also a cloud roadmap, which for some reason, I don't think a lot of folks know about.
Yeah.
But if they go out and look at the cloud roadmap, there's all sorts of really cool things that are coming down the pipe. So we're going to have network devices from companies like Kemp and F5 that are just going to be available in the marketplace one day. So at some point, you're going to be able to go out and just spin up an F5 load balancer, like a big IP load balancer, and be off and running based on a market level service that you've just purchased from them. So I think, you know, you can look at it and say, hey, it's a stopgap. Or maybe we need to deploy a more traditional solution, or we can look at the roadmap and see what's going to work based on what we have today. I think a lot of people have gotten really good at working around the limitations of Azure as they exist. So there's a lot of good guidance out there for leveraging things like load balancers within cloud services, or leveraging something like Traffic Manager kind of as a load balancer light kind of solution. So there's other ways around it. If folks want to take a look at it, or if they see gaps in the solution, things like that, it's definitely something to keep your eyes on, because they just iterate at this hugely rapid pace, right? They're very similar to, I would say, like AWS in the way that service updates are released for Azure. I think both services had on the order of like 450 to 500 service updates last year, and they continue to grow and grow and iterate and iterate. So it's pretty easy to get out there and say like, okay, let me look at the roadmap and see where this is today. Where is it going to be tomorrow? And be able to hopefully align to that a little bit and figure out where things are going
to
be.
Yeah, the rapid deployment or rapid addition of features to Azure is one of the reasons why I have no problem keep investing all the different apps that I'm building, or all the things I'm building and hosting on top of Azure, because you know that the platform is just getting better and better. I mean, we just recently, for the first time, we've seen actually the pricing actually go in the opposite direction what we normally see. Pricing usually goes down. It just went up a little bit. It was only for like currency and exchange rates and stuff. But I mean, it's everything is going in the right direction with this, and seeing features and costs going down. So it's been I think they're doing a phenomenal job with their platform, specifically around the developer stuff, but adding more and more of this DevOps stuff, a lot more of the IT pro and management stuff as well to the platform. It's making it better for all of us.
Yeah, I would absolutely recommend that anybody, you know, I tend to consume a lot of news and things like that on the side. So if you have an RSS reader, like a news service that you really like that can consume RSS feeds, like Feedly or Feed Wrangler or something like that, there is a service updates feed that's available from the Azure site. So if you just Google or Bing for Azure service updates, it'll take you straight to the service updates page. And those are quick little blurbs. They're usually like less than like 200 characters. And you can just click on that RSS feed and subscribe to it, and you'll know all these service updates as soon as they come out. So that's where they announce new things. They announce GAs. They say, hey, we tweaked this little thing. We moved this thing, this little bit and piece around, and it's all there and available and ready to go. So maybe we can get you to put that in your show notes. I'll send you a link to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I saw the link just come across you. I'll definitely put this in the show notes. I wasn't aware of this. This will definitely be something that I subscribe to. So awesome resource, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And it covers all the services. It's not just developer or IT pro focused. You know, if they release some new tooling for, you'll see everything up in here, from like web API stuff for API management to Azure Spark stuff that's part of HD Insight. And it's anything across the board. As soon as they cut a service update or a new service goes preview or a service GAs, it's going to be published there first.
Yeah, this is a great resource. I weren't aware of this. We'll mention this definitely in the show notes so everybody can take a look at this. Cool. Well, hey, man, thanks a lot for doing this. I mean, this has been a ton of great info. I hope our listeners have been able to learn a whole lot about application proxy and application gateway. I guess, where people looking for you? Again, we talked about it at the beginning, but where's the best place for people to find you and learn more about what you're up to, Scott?
Sure. So I would say best place to get a hold of me is probably Twitter. I'm CipherTXT, CipherTXT there. I've got a blog at psconfig.com. So that's just hosted on Tumblr. So folks can come in and ask questions and do all those fun Tumblr-ish things that happen there. And then I've also got the other Office 365 Cloud whatever podcast that I do with Dan Usher, and that's over at brewery.fm. So I would say if folks are interested in things maybe a little bit more outside of Azure. So we talk a lot about AWS and Google Compute and all the other, different things that come along with that as well. So that might be a good resource for folks to pick up on, just one or two kind of quick hits for learning about some of this stuff.
Awesome. Well, hey, Scott, thanks a lot for taking the time today. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Any time, or, maybe we'll run into each other in Jack sometime. And
hey, I know, I'd love to do that. It's funny. It's like where I live, I don't do any business where I live. I live closer to St. Augustine, which I guess a lot of our listeners don't have a clue what that is. But I live Jacksonville and St. Augustine are about 45 minutes or an hour away from each other. And so I live way out in the sticks, away from everything. I work from home. The only work that I do is either online or I have to go get on a plane. So I don't get to see hardly anybody in Jacksonville. People move here and they're like, hey, when you moved to Jackson, a couple of the people that moved here recently, they're like, hey, tell me what the job market's like. I'm like, I don't know. I haven't worked here for 8 or 9 years.
Yeah. I'm beginning to find that, I'm over, right by downtown. So I'm just in San Marco.
Okay.
And, I find, I work for a company up in DC, like I said, so I'm up in DC quite a bit of the time, running around and doing things for clients up here. Yeah. It's been good and it's been fun.
Now, I guess we'll be talking soon.
All right, great. Thanks, Andrew.
Take care.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.